So tonight we're going to talk about anger and strife. So let's think a little bit about these topics as we get going here. So would you say that anger is an emotion, or is anger a choice?
It's a choice.
Okay, there you go. Tell you what, just walk right in answering questions. A student right there, top of the class. Fall out of bed, cooking breakfast right there. Okay. what did you say? I forgot what you said.
You know, I said it's a choice. And
yeah, okay.
There are things that just reactionary. Boy, that angers me. Just even sometimes a statement. Mm. But I think, we as Christians shouldn't, quick to hear, but slow to speak. And we should condition ourselves that we don't get angry by stupid remarks that people might make.
Well, and I think that it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, you just said something happens and it's just instinctive. We have a reaction, but of course, there might be an internal emotional reaction, but then what do we do with that kind of thing? But I just want you to think about in terms of a choice or emotion, because I do think that the Proverbs shine a little light on that. Were you going to say something?
I was, but
I'm not. Okay. Well, we're through talking about speech, but that's okay. And sin not. So there is a way in which we can possess an anger, but yet not have the wrong reaction. There's a way that that happens. So there can be an automatic, almost an emotional kind of response.
God has anger.
God sure does. Jesus showed anger at times. I think you see it in some of Paul's writings.
It's not one of the seven things that he hates.
Right. That's right. So I think it's an interesting thing that there is an emotional aspect to anger, but there is, at the end of the day, something we have to do with it. Can you think of some Bible characters that showed wisdom regarding anger?
Moses.
He was constantly provoked.
Yeah, what the people were doing and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Joseph,
when
he was accused.
Who's that?
Joseph.
Yes, Joseph, and how he was treated. Yeah. And I think even those events of the last chapters of Genesis shows Joseph struggling with what to do with his brothers a little bit, and even after all those years.
Job.
Yeah, and Job. Yeah. Yeah.
Christ. Jesus.
Obviously Christ, time and time and time again. Think of any Bible characters who did not show wisdom when they were angry.
Samson.
So she said Samson that didn't show wisdom when he was angry. Yeah. Anybody else comes to mind?
Cain.
Who?
Cain.
Cain.
That's
an example. And even Moses, when he struck the rod and talked about, we've got to fetch you water, that kind of thing, and didn't honor God and set apart God. So anger is all throughout the Bible. It's just a common human experience. Well, we're looking at anger and strife, and we'll see how the Proverbs connect those. Strife or conflict or quarreling. We'll see the term quarrel a lot in the book of Proverbs. Is strife a natural occurrence, or is it manufactured within relationships? Strife and conflict. And maybe there's not an either or answer here. These are just to get you thinking.
Anger is a little bit of a because we're human, we're going to conflict about something.
Uh-huh.
Now, does there have to be strife? No. Sometimes we let it go beyond.
There are some people that enjoy.
Right.
Proverbs, we're going to comment on that. Yeah. So, we understand that as humans interact with each other, they don't always see things the same way, they don't think the same way, they sometimes rub each other the wrong way, and so we understand that a little conflict is part of the territory, but There are things that we can do that can make that better. And when we can manage or resolve that, there are things that we can do that makes it worse. And some enjoy that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Well, let's talk about anger first of all, and look at this series of Proverbs here. So let's first of all look at 16:32. Still not working. 16:32. Okay. Are you just going to do it manually for me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, I'll tell you when to go. All right, 16:32. Let's look at this one first of all. Can you read that for us, Earl? 16:32. Proverbs 16:32.
He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city.
Okay. That's a big comparison. That if you can control your spirit, and the synonymous here statement is slow to anger or ruling your spirit. So those are synonymous. Person who controls his anger is ruling their spirit. That if you're a person who can rule your own spirit, you're mightier than a man who takes a city. Now remember, in ancient times, cities were walled and fortified. And so to take a fortified walled city was very, very hard. It would equate to us talking about somebody invading a country today. Is this hyperbole? Or is there actual truth in this statement?
There is actual truth in this statement. And the reason I would relate to, I love history, and I'm right now reading a book on Stalingrad, how General Paulsen, the Germans are trying to take the city, General Zhukov is trying to protect. And cool under fire, and that's what it takes to take a city, to tear it down, to surround however your defenses are, your offenses are going to be. And then I see on the Russian side, the Russian general was very cool under fire, dealing with the trying to get reinforcements. And so the point is what I see is ones that were losing patience and couldn't control their emotions. And making stupid decisions, where the other one defending a city was making cool decisions and under terrible circumstances. So yeah, I can see that happening in real life. And we see that throughout military history. Those that were General Grant during the Civil War was cool under fire. He was in control of things.
I agree with both those figures. Can you think of somebody in the past who actually conquered cities in countries, but couldn't conquer themselves?
Yeah, Adolf Hitler.
Alexander the Great.
All kinds. All kinds of great military conquerors whose personal lives were a wreck. So I think that this is not, imagery. I think this is true. This is actual, that the hardest thing to conquer is self. It really is. Look at 29:11. Actually, I'm going to look at two in a row. 29:11 and 14:29. Okay, 12:16. So, 29:11. Can you read that, Lori? And then 14:29. Olivia, can you read that? 29:11.
A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back.
So this doesn't mention anger per se, but it does talk about giving vent to your spirit versus a wise man who holds back. It's the idea of internal control, which we see equated to anger. Now, 14:29.
He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly.
Okay. Now, it's talking about anger here, being slow to anger. Think about these two. Think about all of these. It's a good time for this question. How is the cause of your anger factored into this counsel? In other words, it's telling us to be slow to anger and control your spirit and all that. Whatever's causing our anger, is that factored in at all in these Proverbs? Is there anything said about what's making a person angry? None. What's our number one justification for anger?
Well, this happened. You know,
you've been wrong.
Been wrong. I was treated this way. This happened to me. I think it's possible that anger might be, and we understand that you can be angry and not sin. But there are a lot of passages that do talk about anger that is sinful. And regarding that anger, it's probably one of the most justified sins we commit. There are times in which we're really angry and we justify it. And it's not just an anger that's under control, but it's getting out of control. And I want you to see that being slow to anger, period, is what the Proverbs are teaching us. It's not. Now, when this happens, be slow to anger. When this happens and that happens, be slow to anger. Now, when this over here happens, I think the general rule is we understand that God sometimes gets immediately angry, but he's also God. He has the right perfect valve there. But it is the proverbial guidance here that the general rule, the general counsel here is the cause of the anger is irrelevant. You might need to be angry about something. There are some things that should, quote, vex our spirits, for like with Lot. But even at that, being slow to anger means that you're choosing to be angry legitimately and manifest it in a legitimate way. But the general rule is be slow to anger, regardless of what's prompting it. And I guess we can see the wisdom in that is if you're slow to anger, you may get angry, but you're controlling it, then your response is going to be appropriate, kind of thing. So, and then that last one there, 1429, associates having understanding and being slow to anger. How do they go together? Understanding is one of those frequent terms in the book of Proverbs. How do these things go together, having understanding and being slow to anger?
Well, you understand. I think as we grow as a person, as a Christian, we start to understand how people are, I mean, how they do and say things. And so we have an understanding of, well, this person says it because, first off, maybe they're ignorant of Scripture. Nothing irritates me more when someone misapplies Scripture, takes things out of context. I mean, it really gets under my skin. But as we grow as a Christian, we start to understand that when people, you know, they're going to act like that. I mean, my dad always had a good saying. He says, there's two kinds of people in this world. He said, there are good people. He said, it doesn't make a difference if they're rich or poor, black or white, well-educated or illiterate. He says, there's good people and then there's idiots. And I've come to realize, yeah. And so when you start to understand, there are some people out there, they're just an idiot. So you, when they make idiotic statements, you've conditioned yourself. You're not quick-tempered. Mm-hmm. You're not going to respond right away to that insult or that stupid comment. You learn to control yourself, yeah. And you learn to deal with it. And I think that comes with understanding and wisdom.
Yeah, it does. I mean, haven't we all gotten really angry about something that we find out later on that we had some facts incorrect?
Yes.
And then we feel sort of foolish. And understanding and slow to anger go together because it's like, okay, I don't need to start boiling about this. I need to really learn about it, understand it, get the facts, and let everything come together before I react, kind of thing. And so understanding is one of those terms in the Proverbs. It's unique. It's different than being wise, but it is in that category of being wise. Seeking wisdom, seeking knowledge, having understanding, they are used in parallel ways in this book. And so a wise person is slow to anger. Look at that next one, 12:16. Can you read that for us, Zachary 12:16?
The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult.
That's what the English Standard says in that second statement. The prudent ignores an insult. Any other translations phrase that a little differently?
Mine has a prudent man conceals dishonor.
Okay. Conceals dishonor. In other words, see the connection of insult and dishonor? Somebody dishonors you. That's an insult.
A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame.
Okay, cover shame. It's the idea that somebody's trying to belittle you and you don't react to it. Okay? Yeah, Lord.
This is the wise ignore insults.
The wise ignores insults, okay? Or the prudent ignores insults. That's real easy, isn't it? It's hard, isn't it, when you're insulted? Somebody's trying to dishonor you, show disrespect, and you don't have a reaction. Go back to that first one we looked at. A person who can control their spirit is mightier than a man who can take a city. A person who can take an insult and not react in a bad way, wow. And when I asked a while ago about examples of people who wisely, applied wisdom to anger, somebody said Jesus. Look how Jesus was insulted. He was so misrepresented, lied about, insulted. He's dying on the cross and they're insulting him. So sometimes I'll read those texts where they're insulting Jesus while he's on the cross. And I'm ashamed to admit it. I get these thoughts like, oh, he ought to zap him. And he could zap him, but he doesn't. It's you talk about a degree of control and a degree of wisdom is letting an insult bounce off of you. It's just impressive what Jesus does. Okay, anything else about controlling anger? We're going to look at some more here. Okay, consequences of anger. Look at the first one, 19:19. This is where we're going to slide into strife. 19:19, Ray Conies, can you read that for us, please?
The person who has great anger must pay the consequences. Because if you rescue him, you'll have to do it again.
Okay. Two insights here in this proverb, and there are two people addressed here. The first person addressed at the beginning of verse 19 is the hot-tempered person. What is it saying about the hot-tempered person? He's going to get punishment. He'll pay a price. He'll pay a penalty. So when it comes to learning about being slow to anger, if we're going to be quick to anger, we have to realize there are going to be consequences. There's a price to pay for that. Who's the second person addressed? Somebody else who comes in and bails them out, helps them, delivers them. And what is the wisdom passed on here?
Bail them out because you don't end up
doing it. You have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about this. Put this back with that first statement that we read about controlling your spirit and conquering a city in 1632 there. Think about that. Here's a person who's hot-tempered. He can't control his spirit, right? Can you?
Can you control his spirit or your spirit?
Yeah, can you control his spirit?
No.
So you keep trying to help him and deliver him and get him out of trouble, but what good are you doing? Until he gets himself under control, he's just going to keep getting himself in trouble. It's in the category over in the New Testament about casting your pearls before the swine. It's the idea that you can only do so much for somebody. They're in control of themselves. They have choices to make. You can't make them for them. And you can easily get caught up into that. You know, that one about, and I don't have it written down because this just popped in my head, about don't cast your pearls before swine. And that text talks about lest they turn. And it took me years before I saw this. Lest they turn and rend you to pieces. Now, A lot of times swine back in biblical days, they were pretty gnarly beasts, and sort of those old fat, lazy, mud-wallowing things that we're used to. It would be something close to like a wild boar. So one reason why you don't cast your pearls before swine, in other words, you keep trying to help somebody, you keep trying to give them things, and you keep trying to deliver them and all that, but they all have none of it. What's going to end up happening, yes, they're hurting themselves, but eventually you're getting hurt, lest they turn and rend you to pieces. And this that reminds me of this. I hadn't thought about it until just right then, that here's a hot-tempered man, he's going to pay a price. Oh, and by the way, if you keep trying to get involved with him and help him out and deliver him, then you're just going to have to do it over and over and over. You're going to get pulled down into that pit. Now, we understand we try to help people. We try to teach people, encourage people, and whatever we can do for them. This is depicting a situation where a person is a hot-tempered person and we can't compensate for their hot-temperedness. We can't counter it. And I think sometimes we do that. We sort of try to, it's like when you bowl, you know, and you got the gutters, but then they do it with kids. They've got those little things they can flip into the gutter, and no matter what you do, the ball doesn't go in the gutter. It eventually gets down the lane. Sometimes we try to throw those guards in there, those bumper things in there for people. And the thing is, it does them no good. We keep trying to compensate and buffer for them, but it does them no good. They've got to pay their own penalty, because actually in paying their own penalty is their best chance of learning the right lesson. So there's probably some parental application there. 1518. Zachary, there, thank you. Flip that over. 1518. Can you read that for us? Frank, you have that, 15, verse 18.
A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention.
Okay, look at contrast there. That's that. There's that antithesis in the Proverbs. Hot-tempered man stirs up strife. Slow to anger quiets contention. I suppose that so far we've been looking at how that the person slow to anger is doing things that's helping himself. And that's so true. You're keeping yourself out of, you know, overreactions and things such as that. This broadens it. The person who's slow to anger, he taps down contention. But the person who is hot-tempered stirs up strife. So that's one of the big consequences of having a temper and having a problem with anger, is that it's a ripple effect. And it affects all kinds of relationships. So let's talk about strife here. You can flip it, Zachary. 20 and verse 3. Elaine, can you read that for us? 20 and verse 3.
Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will fall.
Okay, contrast between a person in honor who's keeping out of strife and the fool who's going to be quarreling. Okay, English Standard says quarreling there at the end of verse 3. What are some other translations? Is it all quarreling? Let's not quarrel about it. It's okay.
Go ahead, Kathy.
It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel.
Start a quarrel. Okay. What does this term mean, you think? And we can understand it by the contexts here. It's not like a disagreement. What's a quarrel? What does it mean to quarrel?
An argument.
An argument?
Ongoing.
The what?
Ongoing.
Maybe ongoing. It's sustained.
I find people that are very cynical. It's like nothing is good to them. I mean, they can look at a beautiful sunny day and say, boy, you know, we really need some rain.
Not a problem with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Disagreements.
Okay. Yeah, it's disagreements to the point that it, you know, it gets out of control and it creates this strife that we're talking about.
Well, it's two parties where neither one is really listening. They're just both kind of staying in their own.
I'm trying to always be careful about saying that the way things are today and it's never been like that, because I don't think it usually is. But I will say that contemporary Americans have taken it to an art form of arguing, debating, and not listening. It's not debating, it's just, it's all one way. It's just all one way. And it's very echo chamberish kind of thing. And that is quarreling. Where it's not two different views that are trying to understand each other and interact, and maybe one person actually learns something from the other one and changes their perspective, or maybe both do. It's just the idea, it just keeps getting ratcheting, you just keep ratcheting it up. It just keeps getting more intense. The rhetoric gets more intense, and it gets hot and hot and hotter and so forth. Why is it foolish to quarrel? Every fool will be quarreling. Why does quarreling go along with being foolish in light of the term fool and foolishness that we've seen in this book? And now we're reading it during the week.
I think it's just what you were just saying. It's a lack of the fool that wants to quarrel. He doesn't want to learn or understand the other person's position. And so it's like it's like talking to the wall.
Okay. Right?
You've got a person that he's quick to quarrel, and that's his nature. And so no matter, you can't appease people like that. You can't say, well, let's see if we can find some common ground. They don't want the common ground.
Yeah, right. Right. They don't want that. And when we think about that term fool, obviously constantly in the Proverbs, to understand foolishness, you see it in light of wisdom in the Proverbs. To understand wisdom, you see it in light of foolishness. They're constantly shining light on each other and defining each other. And think about think about wisdom. We've talked about wisdom involves this idea of being able to see down the road, see consequences. And the fool is the person that lives in the moment. They don't see any consequences. So think about how that goes with quarreling. I mean, if you know a heated discussion with someone, you know is not going to do any good, what should you do? Just don't have it. Just don't have it. It's just a waste of good energy and even bad energy. It doesn't solve anything. Now, you've got to have good reason to understand that. But sometimes that's a way to keep peace in the neighborhood or in the job site or something. That, okay, if I say this or we get into this, it's just going to make things worse. We just need to just let this thing slide to the side. Yeah, Zach.
This whole discussion is just making me think of arguments on Facebook and other social media.
Yeah. And social media makes it worse because there's not really a give and take. All this is a megaphone. It's not a conversation. People think it is, but it's a megaphone, not a conversation. Yeah. So look at 26:21. Flip over there, Zachary. 26:21. Vince, read that for us, please. 26:21.
Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife.
Okay, look at the word picture here. What does the imagery do for you?
Well, as you know, James was saying about how the tongue is starting to force on fire.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here with hot ember. You place it with wood, it flares up.
Okay.
So the same thing with the contentious man, like to kindle that strife.
Yeah.
Here you go.
And this was really not by design. It just sort of worked out this way. But we just talked Sunday about speech. And you referenced the James 2, which described James 3, which references the tongue setting a fire force and all that. Can you have a quarrel? Can you have a quarrel without speech? Not really. You got to have communication to have a quarrel. So think about controlling your speech and then this topic. They go right hand in hand. I mean, Sunday's material blends right in, dovetails right in with all of this, okay? And a fire has to have fuel. And the fuel of quarrels is words. Words not controlled. Words that are not fitly spoken. Words that are not apt, as we talked about the other day. You go through and look at all that the Proverbs say about speech, and you look at all the Proverbs says about damaging speech. That damaging speech, that's the wood that's thrown on the fire of strife. That's what it is.
Just the verse before that, in 26:20, it says, "For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisper, contention quiets down." And again, that speech of whispering, you know, backbiting, one that likes to start gossiping and keep things stirred up.
Yes, that whole section, in a way, is about strife and the different elements to it, and the whispering, the gossiping, is talked about in that context in verse 22 also. And that's the gossiping is also something that eventually leads to strife. Because the nature of gossip means it spreads, it gets out, and then people find out, and they're like, "What? You said this?" And so forth. This is showing us here. "So is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife." This is not sport. Being a person that likes to argue all the time and that is quick to argue and to quarrel, it's not just a personality trait. It's a moral problem. It's not like, "Well, that's just who I am. I just love really to give people a piece of my mind. I just really like, when I disagree with somebody, I like letting them have it. And I'm going to say what I think," and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's a character problem. Because that is being quarrelsome that leads to strife. It's like wood on a fire. That quarrelsome spirit fuels strife and conflict. It's not sport. It's like two teenage boys throwing a ball around and wrestling in a china shop. You guys can't do that in here. You are going to damage something. Not you might, you are going to damage something. I've never seen two teenage boys throw a ball around and wrestle and not break something. So get in here something that can't be broken. It's just going to be an automatic kind of thing. And so... this is a general life thing, but when you think about the dynamics of relationships within a church, that if a church has just one, two, sometimes just one, but one's a problem, but if you get two plus people who really like to quarrel, there are going to be problems, big problems. And this is going to have a ripple effect. And damage is going to be done. Things are going to get broken. Look at the next one, 10:12. Zachary, flip over there. 10:12. Elaine, can you read that, please? 10:12.
"Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions."
Okay. Now, we're getting deeper on strife here, not just anger. And we're getting down to what's below strife, down to the root system of it. And here we're told that it's hatred. What's that? Again, these are some simple concepts. I think it's worth stopping and having a proper idea in light of how it's used in these verses. What is hatred?
It's to greatly dislike someone for some reason.
More in the core.
Something deep and something sustained, isn't it? I mean, people do things and say things that we don't like, and somebody does enough of them, and we just sort of get a, you know, bad feeling about the person. I think the hatred thing is, like you say, Ray, it's really deep, and it's not temporary. It's a sustained thing. It's
a way of life.
It's a way of thinking and living and interacting. It's like a bag you carry around all the time. It's not just something you just pick up and set down. It's something you got slung over your shoulder as far as your attitude toward that person. And it affects all your interaction with that person. It affects all your thoughts about that person. That person could jump in front of a car and save a two-year-old baby out in the street, okay, and get both their legs run over and then drag themselves to hand an apple pie to an old woman in the house, okay. And you still look at that person and say, "I wonder why they did that. I bet you they and that you had such a spite for that person that you can see no good and nothing of redeeming about that person. And this is not abstract. This is not abstract. And hate is so powerful that through time, there have been people who have hated other people and they never even knew them. I hate them. Well, have you ever been to Japan? Have you ever met a Japanese person? Have you ever had an interaction with a German person? Interaction with a Muslim person? And it's just wholesale hate, even though I don't know anything personal about them. It's a blinding kind of thing. I guess that's another aspect we can put to it. It's deep, it's sustained, and it's blinding. You can't see anything positive. It's just all dark, all of it. Well, it says here that hatred stirs up strife. Hatred doesn't stay where? Within that person. It comes out somehow. It stirs things up. Okay? Really does. What's the cause of hate?
I think a lot of times it's misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding? Yeah.
The person hates themselves.
Yeah, sometimes I've got deep. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that they attack others because they're miserable.
To avenge past.
You know, past wrongs.
Yeah. You know, thinking of individuals, I was thinking of countries.
Groups.
Ireland, you know, the strike. Yeah. They called that the strike.
Yeah.
Childhood, the way they're raised.
Things that are bred in them, thoughts, feelings, or even experiences that make them bitter or make them angry at themselves and so forth. And, you know, the justification thing on a large scale and Ray's talking about, you can pinpoint almost any group in time that's being mistreated and run that thing forward and they'll turn around and mistreat somebody else a century later in the same way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was a kid, I tell people that, you know, and some of you can relate to this, we never heard of radical Islamic terrorists, but we heard of the IRA, the Irish terrorists that were doing things over in England. Well, do you know why those people were so upset? Run that thing back about 100 years and then another 200 years, 300 years to see what the English did to the Irish. Okay? It's terrible. So it just breeds. That's another thing about we're getting a really good definition of hatred. It's deep, it's sustained, it's blinding, and it breeds. If it's not contained, and I guess that's one of the themes of this, of these Proverbs tonight. If you don't get this stuff under control, it just seeps out, and the damage is extensive if you don't get it under control, because that's really the constant theme that the Proverbs are telling us to do is get it under control, tap it down. 29:22, Zachary. Speaking of that, this talks about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, why don't you read it too? You were confused, and I don't blame you. You advance it, now read it.
All right. A man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression.
So look at that. Man of wrath stirs up strife. It's not there, but he stirs it up. The one given to anger causes much transgression. Do you get the idea that it's only limited to him? May or may not be. Causes much transgression. There's that ripple effect. There's that seeping out, spreading out. Okay, it's like fire. Vince was talking about. This is a real sobering thought. If I can't control my anger, I could handle myself in such a way that sets up situations where other people also do something sinful. Because it's called strife here. Strife involves more than one person. So I'm not getting myself under control. That then leads to a conflict with somebody else. And look at this. Flip on to the next one. And then Olivia, read 17:19.
He who loves transgression loves strife, and he who exalts his gate seeks destruction.
Okay, let me talk about that second statement real quickly. About a high gate or setting up a gate or setting up a door. What does that mean? I really don't know exactly. This is tough. I think there are two good possibilities. One is the idea of setting up a gate or setting up a door refers to the idea of arrogance. You're elevating yourself, or it's an idiom. Like we may say, well, when he heard about that, he raised the roof. It's the idea of blowing your top. It might be that, okay? That's not as important as that first statement that says, because that second statement is only illuminating it. It's the base statement that says, whoever loves transgression loves strife. So the person who likes conflict and argument and quarrels is a person who loves transgression. They love sin. So see, this is not a personality thing. This is a moral thing that we're looking at. Here. Yeah.
You made the comment a minute ago that when people live like that, it causes other people to sin as well. Reminds us of the old Hatfield McCoy's deal, you know, where feuds go on between families and countries for years and years and years.
Right. What we're looking at here, we think of the, you know, two person kind of thing, but you can just blow that up to communities, families, countries, and it really holds true at that scale, on that scale too. It really does. And look at that last one, 17:14. Flip that for us. 17:14. You have that, Frank, 17:14.
The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts.
Boy, that's a good vivid picture, isn't it? Don't open the spigot. Don't break the dam loose, because here it's going to all flow. And so that's what we've been building to and seeing that before. If you can prevent hatred and all these kinds of things and prevent a quarrel by controlling your anger, then you may very well stop a lot of bad things. Not just in your life, but in the lives of other people. This is talking about prevention being so valuable. Because once strife starts, once the hatred and the anger gets out of control, and then somebody gets contentious and they start quarreling, and other people get dragged in, maybe this one person, and then this one person gets dragged in, runs and says, you know what they did? And then they get involved in it. Next thing you know, it just multiplies. When strife starts, people get hurt, they get angry, and they start doing and saying things they ought not do. Now, they're responsible for that. And Jesus talked about this in Matthew 10, woe for offenses must come. You know, offenses must come, but woe to those through whom they come. So somebody can sin because they get stirred up in a quarrel, but that could have been prevented if the first person would have controlled the anger. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your interest and participation.